Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Stack Overflow podcast. Ben is almost on vacation edition. I am the director of content here at Stack Overflow, and I always bring my co-host with the most, Ryan Donovan, editor of our blog and our newsletter on. Ryan, I'm headed to your homeland. That's going to Iceland.
The motherland.
Ryan Thor Donovan, going to the motherland. Excited. There's an active volcano, but it's not too active.
Yeah.
You got to see the lava, but you don't have to dodge the lava.
Right. You can do some volcano tourism if you want.
Yeah, we'll see. I have a great little opener for us here. The small Caribbean territory of Anguilla. Or is it pronounced Anguilla? A-N-G-U-I-L-L, Anguilla. Made $32 million last year from the .ai domain space, 10% of its GDP. So if there's one good thing to come out of this hype cycle, it is that the people of Anguilla are having a boom.
Yeah.
For every domain registration, they get anywhere from $140 to thousands of dollars.
Yeah. I love the small countries benefiting from their top-level domains. You know, reminds me of Tuvalu getting hella paid because they had the .tv.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I think Iceland has a good one, too. They're .is.
Oh, that's good. How many people live in Anguilla? Take a guess.
Oh, geez. 2 million.
It says it's a territory of 16,000 people.
Wow.
So 32 million a year ain't bad if you're splitting it that many ways. Yeah. Pretty good. All right. So that was just a little amuse-bouche. That was just a little opener for us.
Yeah.
Moving on to more serious things. We had this week a bunch of announcements from the U.S. government that they are bringing antitrust cases. And you and I have discussed this before with respect to the European Union.
Right.
It seems as though governments feel that now is the time to force Apple to open up its walled garden. Ryan and I do not have an opinion on this, one way or the other, that we will state on this podcast. This is not financial advice. Consult your lawyer. But obviously, it's a huge deal for developers and for the entire ecosystem. And so can't ignore that news. And also, I think the fact that we're talking not about just, you know, an area like search, where the switching cost is relatively simple.
Yeah.
But I am deeply bought into the iOS ecosystem.
Right.
It would be long, painful, and expensive, you know, if I wanted to go to Android with my whole family, with my whole collection of devices, with my entire set of cloud services, you know.
Right.
So opening that up from the point of view of a monopoly is going to be quite interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that is a business model. You know, we talk about in other places, vendor lock-in, right? Everybody says we don't want to get vendor lock-in. But I think, you know, I've talked about it before, Apple has had a very protective ecosystem, right?
Right.
Their simplicity, their uniformity of design has been a positive. But
yeah,
I did hear something recently that the car makers were also mad at Apple because Apple wanted full control over the sensors and infotainment system when Apple Play connected. Which seems
interesting.
That seems a bit dangerous to me.
Right. That's an interesting area, right? Like when something is on, who's collecting the data? How is the data shared? I mean, when you're talking about sensors, I would assume we're not talking about, like, you know, my backup camera or the thing that's keeping me in my lane or the thing that's keeping me a certain distance from the car in front of me.
Right.
Apple Play, which I love and which I have in the car, can kind of take over, for example, like the button on my steering wheel that then voice activation, right?
Right.
And when they don't play nicely together, it's kind of a pain in the butt. Right. I actually have to kind of agree with that. Like,
yeah.
I'm in CarPlay, I'm doing Spotify, I'm looking at maps, and then I hit the button on the car and suddenly I'm in Toyota's land.
Right.
And like, they're not talking to each other.
Right. Yeah. And honestly, like, it would be a testing nightmare for Apple to have to, you know, test their system on every car's hardware.
Oh, yeah.
are they going to force all the cars to have some sort of standardization? Like, you know, I've known friends who've developed it on mobile, and, you know, one friend would go to conferences just so he could get a mobile phone to test his games on.
Yeah.
Hardware variability is no joke.
I think that Stack Overflow is the only place I've ever worked that has a fair number of what we call learn, share, grow days, mm-hmm. where we get a Friday, not off of work, but to invest in personal growth. They offer, you know, classes and lectures, and we have summer Fridays. And so we have sometimes what amounts to like a 4-day work week with a little bit of, you know, 1-day reserve for other stuff. A good friend of mine, the chief strategy officer at Kickstarter, was in front of a Senate hearing, the Committee on Labor something last week, to preach the virtues of the 4-day work week. Mm. Apparently, it's done nothing but increase productivity and employee engagement and reduced employee turnover at Kickstarter, where he works. Mm-hmm. And they had a professor there who said that this seems like a kind of, you know, remote digital knowledge worker only thing, but we've actually tested this across manufacturing and food services and police departments, and mm-hmm. it works. Yeah. They had, you know, some naysayers there from the largest HR organization in the United States or something like that.
Right.
It was definitely cool to see people bringing hard data to the table after now about 3 or 4 years of pilot programs where people have switched. And in all of these cases, not seen a loss in productivity, but have seen a big boost in employee engagement, happiness, and employee retention.
Yeah. I've also heard a lot of these statistics that 4-day work week improves productivity per day. And I, you know, I'm for it, but I think a lot of folks will have a hard time adjusting to it. I think a lot of people who have made their brand workaholism, or, you know, made themselves a brand, think of themselves in terms of what their work is, will have a hard time working less.
There was an interesting sort of like thing said that it's like, if you mandate it, it's going to be extremely difficult because, a lot of organizations are, you know, they would have to rethink all their economics. And what about teachers, you know, and people who have 5-day work weeks and now they're, you know, their kids only. So I think it would be interesting if the mandate was every employee has the option to choose. If I want a 4-day work week, I will. You know, if I don't, I'll work 5 days. If I work a 4-day work week, you know, my salary will be X versus Y. Not a full 1/5 less, but, you know, less. And that you would then have people, instead of having the same teacher 5 days a week, they have one teacher 2 days and one teacher 3 days, and they could work corresponding, you know, Fridays or something like that. And the same on a manufacturing line. Like, you just hire a few more people, you pay the same amount overall, and they show up 4 days a week instead of five.
Yeah. And I think, having more people doing the same job would definitely be the solution. But I think not mandating it could fall into, you know, the trap of the flex time, right? Where you're given all this free PTO, take all the PTO you want, and people don't go on vacation unless you mandate it. Mm-hmm. Unless you say you have to take at least 2 weeks. So,
No, that's true.
You know, not mandating, people will be working 5 days a week, and are you going to do 4 days a week? And people kind of sneer at you and like, oh, we being lazy, you trying to cut out.
Right. Ryan, you put a good question in our Stack Overflow nose this week. How to get feedback on a badly reviewed PR asked 3 days ago, already viewed 8,000 times. In my current workplace, I act as lead developer and architect on a team of software developers. The general policy for merge pull requests is that one person has to review. This person must not be the author. Sometimes code is merged, which I personally would not have approved for one or multiple of these reasons. Edge case is not considered. Changes, additions, not designed in a maintainable way. There are inconsistent changes. Not all code received proposed changes, leading to inconsistent program behavior and bugs. The changes didn't achieve the goal of the overarching business requirements. How can I most gracefully give feedback to both the author and the reviewer? In the past, I have been faced with discontent or resentfulness when pointing out that the review did not meet the quality standard I expect for the team.
Yeah. Anytime you give feedback, it's hard. But also, I think one of the things I took from this question is that it didn't meet the quality standard they expected, but they didn't also make those expectations clear. There was no sense of what good was in this question. So a lot of the answers were saying, you know, put out a document, says best practices, here's what we expect, here's what you should do in a review. Otherwise, you know, everybody's just winging it.
I liked that one. They said, you know, for a while, sit down and go over the edge cases with people. And then, you know, if they're new experience, and then when they know what you expect and hopefully you trust them, then maybe, you know, it won't be such a big issue. So I thought that was good advice. Yeah. Also, you're a manager, and when you give people constructive criticism, they're not going to like it. And you have to deal with that negative emotion that is on.
You know, I always feel like I'm a bit of weirdo in this case, because I almost prefer the negative feedback. I almost prefer, like, how can I do better? If you're just like, you're doing great. And I was like, oh, how so?
I'll take that to heart. I'll be sure to be more critical of you in the future. All right. Once I get back from vacation, recharged and refreshed.
That's right.
Shout out to our sort of peer, our web forum peer, Reddit, went public, is now a public company. They sold a bunch of shares to the people who were the most prolific contributors of Reddit. So if you're a you know, big time poster, you got in.
Reddit gold finally means something, huh?
The Reddit gold finally means something. All those shite posts are now worth shares.
Share posts.
Share posts, exactly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was a success. We'll see how it goes. You never know with stocks over the next 6 months, year, 2 years. But folks are saying, okay, this now shows that the window is open, meaning technology companies can float the idea of going public, even if they're not profitable. And as we all know, the tech industry has been roiled by a lot of layoffs and a lot of downsizing over the last year. So maybe this is a healthy sign for our industry, for the world of software developers.
Perhaps. I mean, this is the way that things were in the past. There were a lot of IPO fever. I hope it is a balancing towards companies that, you know, actually have a future instead of, you know, another pets.com.
Reddit's future is bright. If my time on Reddit is any indication, its future is bright.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love the niche posts on there.
Yeah. I love them too.
I ran across this, you know, another AI tool called Devin, which actually does the AI agent thing. It's a developer in a box.
Cognition Labs, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I've heard of it.
And it seems, you know, we joke about AI is not going to take your jobs, but this one seems like it's actually looking to take developer jobs.
Right. Did you get to play with it, or you just watched demos and stuff?
You just watched demos. It's not publicly available yet, but they have demos of, you know, it doing Upwork jobs or fixing issues in open source repos or getting a blog post and then implementing the code.
Yeah. My conspiracy theory at the moment, if I were to float one, is that a lot of the big AI labs are holding back the next generation of tools because they fear the repercussions and response. That if you were to just bring out the next version, you know, ChatGPT-5 today, ChatGPT-6 today, that it's the improvement over 4 would be so striking that it would really be unsettling. And so I think, you know, in a responsible way, they're trying to, and Sam Altman did an interview this week and he said, you know, we're trying to do releases in a way that doesn't catch people by surprise or, you know, make them feel uncomfortable, and that we're going to be more iterative, you know, that you'll see 4.6, 4.7, 5, 4.8 before you would see us just say 5. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. I think we need to get our hands on Devin. It brings together from a team of like medal-winning coders and mathematicians, what folks have been toying around with ever since ChatGPT-4 came out, which is, you know, creating an autonomous agent and adding layers of planning, critique, and retries on top of what Gen AI is good at, which is, you know, offering up potential solutions.
Right. To tap the brakes a little bit, it is just demos, right? You know, everybody kind of knows at this point that the demos, you know, it looks good, but let's see it. Let's get somebody else to play with it. So I am,
yeah,
you know, interested to see where this goes, but
yeah,
it's also a sort of like societal change if these sort of things happen. Like,
right. Yeah. I mean, we had a great discussion with Bill from GitClear. Mm-hmm. He made a lot of really interesting points. When he is a software developer, has been, still remains an engineer. Mm-hmm. End of the day, when he's feeling lazy, he's accepting more of the suggestions from the AI. Mm-hmm. But he finds that that code churns more quickly, that it gets reversed, that it's not as high quality, and that it doesn't use existing methods. And so it doesn't like maintain at the sort of coherence that you get in a code base over a while. And so I thought that was really interesting because like two things can be true at once. Yes, it makes developers faster mm-hmm. and more productive. Yes, sometimes it makes them feel happier. Mm-hmm. But B, the quality may decrease and the tech debt may increase. And so like we don't know yet how those two sides of the seesaw balance out. That was an interesting one. I hope people listen to that episode because he had a lot of good stuff to say. And they looked at a pretty huge amount of, you know, work from developers across a pretty sprawling set of code bases to make that happen. And then the other one, speaking to your Devin example, and like, mm-hmm. this is a striking demo, but we haven't actually seen it like out in the real world to get the good feedback. We have a talk coming up with some folks from Google Cloud and MongoDB. Mm-hmm. We haven't done the podcast yet, but one of the things that they were sort of saying, which I thought was striking, was industry surveys and data that they've been looking at is 10% of the Gen AI projects that people are working on have actually been operationalized or put into production. The other 90% are like, you know, is this going to work for us? It's just a toy demo. It's a, you know, we tried and it didn't work. It's not worth our time. Not to say that 10% is not a big number in 1 year. You know, if we're 1 year in and 10%.
And I think operationalized at scale too.
Right.
So it's something that is, you know, able to run with a number of customers. And I think that either speaks to the vast number of people that are playing around with generative AI or just the difficulty of getting it to be something that is usable for customers.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks as always for listening. If you hear my voice week after next, it means I survived my trip to the volcano. And by the time I return, we'll probably have made a few interesting announcements and posted a few interesting blog posts. So I look forward to getting back on the pod with Ryan. Let's shout out somebody who came on Stack Overflow and helped us out. A lifeboat badge awarded to Robert 2 days ago. The question, in classic Stack Overflow form, the question is square brackets in CSS. I wouldn't say that's written in question form, but that's okay.
Right.
What does it mean when something between square brackets in CSS?
Square brackets in CSS? You gotta get it plugged up.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What does it mean when something between square brackets in CSS?
Yeah.
E.g. input square bracket type equals radio. Well, Robert, we appreciate you coming in, mm-hmm. helping out with this question, even if it wasn't phrased as a question. Gave a great answer and helped over 44,000 people. So appreciate you spreading some knowledge. As always, I am Ben Popper. Find me on X at Ben Popper. Email us with questions or suggestions. If you've played around with Devin, have thoughts on Gen AI, got a interesting coding project that you want to discuss, podcast@stackoverflow is the email. And if you like the show, you can leave us a rating and a review.
I'm Ryan Donovan. I edit the blog here at Stack Overflow. You can read it at stackoverflow.blog. And if you want to reach out to me, I am on X @RThorDonovan.
Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you soon.